I'm going to do a terrific show today, and I'm going to help people because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Predictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm smart enough. That wasn't me, by the way. That was Stuart Smalley. Oh, we have a little SNL news for you that we'll get to a little bit later. It's kind of gross, but we'll get to it. 888-914-9149. Pledge drive is over. Just want to remind you of how grateful we are to you for your generosity. We had a wonderful pledge drive yesterday. We had a need of last week. We had a need of $2.7 million. We exceeded that by far. Oh, and Cyrus, could you send a note and just say Patrick needs that updated number?
Yes.
I want to give an
update. That should be coming any time.
Okay, great. Thanks. Because I want to be able to report what it came to. But it was well beyond what we were hoping for and what we needed. So again, thank you so much for that. We're deeply grateful. We're not in pledge drive mode anymore. This is a regular program, as per usual. If you weren't able to participate last week because of busyness or what have you, you can still get in. We're going to keep the door open for the next day or so. You can still get in by going to relevantradio.com, and you can make a pledge there, and we'll count you toward this pledge drive. The same is true for the Relevant Radio app. So if you want to do that, there's also that number. You can call the number too, 877-291-0123. Cyrus, I think I said that phone number over a million times in the space of a week, but that's what got people to call.
Yeah, and you know you've said it enough when you start dreaming that number over and over again.
Yeah, it's like you're just conditioned to have that. Now, I want to pivot. Before we go to phone calls, I've got a story I want to talk about for just a minute. An Oklahoma jail officers, they played a song on repeat as a torture tactic. This is actually a federal lawsuit. It was almost midnight on November 3rd, 2019, when two Oklahoma County Detention Center officers escorted Joseph Mitchell into a vacant room. They handcuffed him behind his back and secured him to the wall. This according to a federal lawsuit. Then, if you can believe this, the horror. They queued up this song. Don't play it yet. They played it on a loop up to 4 hours, torturing this guy with this song. Play it.
I think I'd rather be waterboarded.
I would already have cracked. At this point, I'll tell you anything.
I'll tell you anything.
I've cracked.
Anything you want to know, I will tell you.
This would crack me like a walnut.
Okay, that's enough. I can't do anymore.
It says, the lawsuit says the volume of the song was so loud that it was reverberating down the hallways. Mitchell and three other former detainees claimed that they were subject to torture tactics while jailed in Oklahoma City. They filed a civil rights lawsuit in federal court against Oklahoma County Sheriff Tommy Johnson III, county commissioners, and the jail trust and two former officers. So that's how they tortured this guy.
You know, this video has over 9 billion views.
What? Billion?
Billion.
Is this on YouTube? All right, I give. I'll tell you anything.
Make it stop.
Yeah, I wouldn't
pull
last
out my
1 minute.
Fingernails or something?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is brutal.
Yeah, it's awful. That's torture.
Baby Shark went viral after a Korean children's entertainment company recorded the song and produced a music video in 2015. Children became obsessed with the infectious song, a development that tormented many parents who were forced to listen to the inane tune and nonsensical lyrics over and over. You're right, 9.5 billion views. That song and other genres of music have been used as a device to torment, the Oklahoma lawsuit said. In July of 2019, officials began playing Baby Shark on repeat to deter homeless people from sleeping.
That's how bad the song is.
Or convening overnight at event space.
Yeah, if you're over 7 years old, this song is awful.
I'm going to tell you a true story. I've had a very colorful life, Cyrus. I got to tell you, I had a very colorful life. And I've seen some things and I've gone some places that I never thought I would ever get to do. I never even knew that they could be done. So I was, this is now, when was this? This would have been early 90s. And the I don't know how this happened, but there was an organization in Panama City, or, you know, in Panama, the country of Panama, not Panama City, Florida. So the country of Panama, I know what it was now, is the Archbishop of that city, Archbishop Marcus McGrath, I think was his name. He's long gone. But he invited me to come down and do a week-long series of presentations throughout the country, all in Spanish. And then a fellow from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, he went with me. And so we were down there for a whole week, and I was presenting, you know, my standard talks in Spanish in this case. And it was wonderful. It was a wonderful trip. I'd never been to Panama before. I saw a lot of things I really enjoyed. But the one thing I remember about this was that the papal nuncio to Panama, he was sort of involved in all this. And so I got a chance to go visit the papal nunciature in Panama. So it's like the embassy for the Vatican. And I went there and he showed us around. I kid you not, Cyrus, that's where Manuel Noriega escaped to when he was being chased. Remember when we ousted him back in whatever, you know, early 90s or late 80s, whatever it was, you know, the U.S. government went down there and we ousted Manuel Noriega. So he basically was able to seek refuge in the papal nunciature. So I went, he showed me, the papal nuncio brought me to where Manuel Noriega was in this room, and he was in there for several days before he finally gave up and they got him. And so he had a machine gun under the bed. It wasn't still there, but it was, you know, he showed me all this stuff. Well, this is the part that I will never forget. There's a parking garage that is built extremely close to that side of the papal nunciature. And by that, I mean, it's like less than 20 feet away from the side of this big house, this big building. What the U.S. military did there was they set up massive amplifiers, speakers, like if you were to go to an AC/DC concert or a KISS concert, like that kind of a sound system. And they set it up aiming at Manuel Noriega's room, and they blasted music until he couldn't take it anymore. And that's how they got him. And I was in that room and I could see there's no way that you could last for very long with that kind of music. Yeah, I give. I'll tell you anything.
If they had that song,
know.
He would only been in there for a couple of minutes.
Have you ever been in Manuel Noriega's bedroom and seen a parking garage that close?
No.
Ever in your life?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I mean, of all the crazy things that I could put on my resume, that's one of the crazier ones.
Do you know what music they played?
I bet if I looked it up, it would say, I don't remember now. I don't remember. It might have been country western. It might have been hard rock. I don't know. But I guess for me, the takeaway there is that really works as a form of torture. You can actually awful. Break somebody down that
it's
way.
Awful.
I think that's the first time Manuel Noriega has come up on this program.
And Baby Shark.
You know,
and
you're
Jim,
right about
Jim
that.
Is sitting here telling me the song's not that bad.
Baby Shark is not that bad?
Yeah, you're wrong, Jim. Yeah. You're wrong.
We can break you, Jim, quickly with that song. You'll crack faster than you realize. He says no. Okay. We'll see. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go to Lucy now in California. Hi, Lucy.
Hello?
Hi there.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much. I have a question for you,
sure.
And I need your opinion. One of my sons is planning to visit his father at another country and has invited his girlfriend to go with him. I said, no, you can't do that. You will cause the scene of a scandal. You are not married. You can't go with her. And then he said, yes, I can, because I asked my friend who's a seminarian at a, you know, it's a, I don't know what order is. This mm-hmm. is a guy, a seminarian. And the seminarian said to him that, yeah, that's okay to go with her, his girlfriend to, you know, fly and mm-hmm. go to another country, mm-hmm. visit his father when they are not married. And I said, no, that's a scandal.
Well, are they planning to stay in the same room together, or would she be in a different room?
The same house, and I don't know if they will sleep. Well, I'm sure she will sleep at another room. But, you know, the family that his father has there is going to be scandalized because they know that he's not married, and then suddenly he shows up with his girlfriend. I am very concerned about that.
I understand, and I don't disagree with you. I share your view. I think that it's inappropriate if they're traveling in a way that would suggest that they are married, and of course they're not, because the scandal would be that, you know, most people are going to assume that if they're traveling together, they're probably staying in the same room together, in which case they're doing other things together. And if they're not married, then of course that is scandalous. Nowadays, people don't seem to be too easily scandalized by much anymore, but you're still right in your view of this. Now, I will say that if the arrangements are such that they will go visit in this other country, they'll visit in that house, and there's nothing that they're not going to be living in the same room or sleeping in the same room, I mean, at least they're not doing something in itself that would be scandalous, but they would need to make that clear. You know, they would need to, you know, oh, we're traveling together, but we're not staying together. We don't stay in the same hotel room together. We don't stay in the same room together. If they made an effort to make sure that that people understood that, people who had a reason to wonder about it anyway, that would help minimize the issue of scandal. But I think that the chances are pretty good, just knowing human nature as it is, that if they're traveling together, then maybe they'll also be doing the other things together too. So I share your concern. But it sounds like you can't stop him because he's an adult now, right? He's over 21.
No, I can't. I can't, but I need to make sure that what I said to him is the truth. That's what I learned when I was young. And they know that he's a good guy. He's very close to God. But you can say whatever you want to, but with your example, you can, you know.
Let me give you an example here, Lucy. Relevant Radio, we're on the up and up in every way. And believe me, I would tell you if we weren't, but we are 100%. And Relevant Radio has what's called a prudence policy. Now, this is part of our HR policy. It's in the, you know, the policy book if you want to look it up. And that is that, to give you a scenario, if there's going to be some event in another town, so let's say I show up at the airport and one of the women who works at Relevant Radio shows up at the same airport at the same time, we can't, according to company policy, we can't rent a car together and drive together, just the two of us.
I understand. Yes.
There are all kinds of things like that, and it's I think it's very good because it helps keep everybody on the straight and narrow. And if it's just not something you're allowed to do, then this effectively eliminates the possibility of mistakes happening. So, I mean, we're all adults. You know, he's a young man. I'm not a young man anymore, but we all need these kinds of fences in our life. So anyway, I don't know what else I can tell you except that you're right. You're right to feel the way you do. If you can't stop him, obviously, well, then just make sure that he knows that what he's doing is going to, at the very least, be the cause of scandal. And that way he can never say, well, I didn't know. I never knew. That'd be my advice, Lucy. I hope he takes your advice. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Peter now in Los Angeles. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Patrick. Happy Mole Monday.
I'm not a big fan of mole, honestly. I had a lot of it growing up, but I never really liked it very much.
Neither am I, but yeah. I figured I'd start another tradition. In regard to tradition, I was talking to one non-practicing Catholic and one Protestant, and they were saying the reason why they can't deal with the Catholic Church is because of the laws, or what I thought was like the magisterium in regards to tradition. For example, where it says to go to Mass, and what was given to the apostles. Because I've heard you many times speak about this issue and have given the references inside the Bible. And I was just trying to figure out, I got to pin my hand, I better call today. So I wonder if you could give me the simple scripture writing.
Sure. Sure. Okay, so we see in two places in Matthew's gospel, Matthew chapter 16 and Matthew chapter 18, where Jesus grants first Peter individually and then the apostles in Matthew chapter 18 corporately the authority to bind and loose. So Matthew 16:18 would be the case of Peter. Matthew 18:18 would be the case of all the apostles. Whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. Then I would point out that in Matthew chapter 28, in the Great Commission section at the very end, so that's verses 19 and 20, Jesus says to the apostles to go into the whole world and make disciples of all nations, baptize them, teach them to observe, he says, all that I've commanded you. So he entrusts to the magisterium, that's the teaching office of the church, the authority and the duty to teach everybody what Jesus wants. Now, not everything that the church teaches came directly from the lips of Jesus. A goodly portion of it came after Jesus ascended to the Father, because Jesus says that I will send you the Holy Spirit. I'll send you the Paraclete, and he will guide you into all truth. So there was more revelation yet to be given that was given by the Holy Spirit after Jesus had ascended to heaven. So then you can see some examples of this. So take a look, for example, at Acts chapter 15, where you see in the wake of St. Peter's dream in Acts chapter 10, in which he saw a large tarp coming down. This is in a dream that he had, a large tarp being lowered down to the ground. And on this tarp were lots and lots of animals, including animals that were unclean, ritually unclean, according to the Mosaic law. And the voice of God in heaven in the dream was saying, "Rise up, Peter, kill and eat." And his dilemma was, well, you want me to eat these animals, but some of them are unclean. So it was revealed to him that God no longer required observation of the Mosaic covenant, meaning that, among other things, you didn't have to keep kosher. You didn't have to avoid certain foods or certain animals that were considered unclean. So fast forward to Acts chapter 15. There you see the church deliberating upon this. St. Peter shared the essence of this revelation that he had received. St. James, who is the Bishop of Jerusalem, he confirms this, and the dispute was settled. And then they send out the apostles and others to the various towns in the region to inform them about what had been decided. And in that context, you see, I believe it's St. James who says, "It seems good to us and the Holy Spirit to lay upon you only these burdens." And among the burdens was, or requirements, maybe not a burden, but the requirement was to not eat meat of animals that had been strangled for sacrifice. And the reason that that was a key element was because there was still blood in the animal. If the animal had been strangled, then there was still blood in the animal. And so that was one of the restrictions that was placed upon them. Don't eat, you know, that kind of food. So these are just a few examples of where the church exercised that authority to bind and loose as given to it by Jesus Christ, and the church has that role. You could also point out one further thing, and that is nowhere does Jesus say that circumcision is abolished. It's the church that says that. Now, in Genesis, we see that God gave the covenant of circumcision. He says this is an everlasting covenant. He says that several times, and yet the observance of that commandment of circumcision was transferred from the actual literal form of circumcision to the elevated form in the case of the sacrament of baptism, which replaces circumcision. And it was the church that made that decision, not Jesus. Jesus didn't, you know, as far as we know anyway, he didn't teach on that particular topic. He may have instructed the apostles, but that's not given to us in Scripture. So there we see another example of the church changing the way in which that commandment would be observed. Now, I could go on and on, but I think that gives you kind of what you're looking for, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Patrick. And thank you for your time and knowledge. And I wonder if you tell Bingo Boy Cyrus to say hello, because I love that story about his bingo story.
His bingo story. I must have missed that one. Cyrus, am I missing something?
Wow, I've only told that once on the air, and that was a really long time ago. So that's cool. Thanks.
You better tell it again. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, we got to go to a break.
No, we don't. You have time for a bingo story. All right. Well, we're going to go to a break. Maybe we'll get that bingo story out of Cyrus at some point. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. Call me. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Just like I. Love me, hold me, love me. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
An oddity I noticed in the news this morning is that Governor Newsom, he had a COVID-19 booster shot, I think 12 days ago, and he's been MIA ever since then. No one has seen him. He hasn't been in the news. He had no appearances. He's just sort of disappeared. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. But I mean, usually when the governor goes on vacation, that's made public because it's part of his, you know, public life. But he's just missing 11, 12 days now. And at least the general public anyway does not know what's going on. So I just thought I'd mention it to you. Does it have anything to do with the fact that he got that shot? I don't know. I don't know. But on the heels of that, San Francisco has just announced that 5-year-olds will need the vaccine to enter restaurants. Well, it is California, after all, the land of crazy. One of the commenters said, if you don't feel safe sitting in a coffee shop unless the 5-year-old across the room is vaccinated, you should stay home. This is from the Daily Wire. Speaking at a virtual town hall, Susan Phillip, the acting health officer and director of disease prevention and control for the San Francisco Health Department, stated that the vaccine mandate requiring children between the ages of 5 and 11, barring them from restaurants unless they were vaccinated with a COVID-19 shot, would be implemented no more than 8 weeks after the Pfizer vaccine for children is fully approved. That news enraged people on social media, who castigated the city government for forcing children to get vaccinated in order to attend public events. Man, did we talk about this a year and a half ago, didn't we? The moderator asked Philip, when do you think the vaccine mandates will happen for grades K through 6 for this age range that we're talking about, ages 5 through 11? What we have heard from the governor's office and the California Department of Public Health is that this will be in effect, as Dr. Woolridge, who's a pediatrician, said, Once the Pfizer vaccine is fully FDA approved. Philip answered, there is a related question about which people have asked, which is, what about the local San Francisco health orders that require vaccination to go into a restaurant or go to a Warriors game? When is that going to be applied to children 5 to 11? We definitely want to make sure and wait until our children have had an opportunity to get vaccinated, she continued. So that will happen no sooner than about 8 weeks after the vaccine is available to kids. So there will be a limited time in which there will not be those requirements. But then at some point, 5 to 11-year-olds will also have to show proof of vaccination to get into restaurants.
You know, I just want to say, shut up.
Was that directed at me? I didn't think so.
No, it's not directed at you.
I need some Dr. Fauci to get
involved. You do not know what you are talking about.
Which is true for a lot of stuff that comes out of California nowadays. Asked who could provide consent for children ages 5 through 11, Philip said, for 5 to 11-year-olds, it would be that child's parents or guardian, legal guardian, who is able to provide consent for vaccination. Asked whether there should be a way to ascertain how small or large the dose for children could be as their weights fluctuate, Woolridge answered, it speaks to the particular nuance in pediatrics where we weight-base many, many medications. However, for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, this is still a quote from him, it is not weight-based like certain other medications in pediatrics, and the vaccine for those ages 5 to 11 was studied using a dose that was one-third of the adult dose, and that was really done in order to prevent side effects from the vaccine, but still offer the same effectiveness and protection against COVID-19. What protection does it offer against
COVID-19? Has everybody gone nuts around here?
So, you know, if you're in San Francisco and you want to take your 5-year-olds out to Chuck E. Cheese, you better have the vaccine certificate ready. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Just that's what's happening. Now, meanwhile, across the country in New York, city workers a few days ago, they took to the streets to protest Mayor Bill de Blasio's vaccine mandate for the entire municipal workforce. A bunch of arrests were made. The mayor announced that all government employees except for jail staff would need to be vaccinated by Friday of last week or placed on unpaid leave. About 5,000 employees demonstrated, marching over the Brooklyn Bridge to Manhattan, many carrying American flags. And Cyrus, you're familiar with the Let's Go Brandon and that whole thing? You've heard of that, right?
My laugh should tell you the answer.
Yeah. Well, there's a de Blasio version of that.
Oh?
No.
I haven't heard
that
this.
I can't even say. Aww. I can't even say it on the air. Some protesters wore NYPD and FDNY shirts. Several hoisted Gadsden Don't Tread on Me flags, while others took the extreme of wearing yellow Stars of David to compare the the inoculation requirement with persecution of Jews. So you've got thousands of New York City workers who are just up in arms saying, we're not going to do this. So.
I don't know what's going on.
What are your thoughts?
I don't know what's going on. I think the Let's Go Brandon thing is, it's funny. When this was Trump, when it was on the other side, the celebrities were getting their Academy Awards and literally.
They were maskless.
And they were cussing out the then president. There was no nuance. It was that, you know, they had the one comedian like had a fake head of his that was cut off that was all bloody. And have Robert De Niro said some things at the Academy Awards. And there's no backlash to that. But
now people are incensed that the Let's Go Brandon thing is just so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Is what they'll say.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to bring you up to date on that. So there is an interesting article at stream.org if anyone is interested in looking at that. It looks at kind of a history of drugs and research and immunizations and such. And also whether or not you can how can I put this? There are people who are saying that, all right, if you are opposed to the COVID shot, that's okay. But remember that other medicines like aspirin and Tylenol and ibuprofen and Benadryl and Ex-Lax and Tums, a whole long list of things, that those medications were tested on tested using aborted fetal stem cells. And this actually refutes that notion. I know it's been making the rounds in Catholic circles in the last few months, but it gives specifics, and it points out that some of these drugs long predate the arrival of legalized abortion in the United States. And so it is actually a red herring that doesn't ultimately stand up to scrutiny to claim that, well, you're taking all these other drugs, you're taking your Ex-Lax, you're taking your Tylenol, you're taking your Tums. And those were tested on aborted fetal stem cells. And it turns out that that's actually not true. There were some tests that were done long after the fact. But this long list of things, apparently only maybe a handful, two or three or four at the most, could actually have any real connection with aborted fetal stem cells. And all the other ones on this long list, it's been demonstrated that they preceded the use of stem cells, and there was nothing in the derivation or the testing or bringing it to market that had to do with stem cell research. It was only done after the fact, and maybe in some cases long after the fact. So because that is a talking point that many people use nowadays, at least since that began to circulate in the last few months, it would be helpful to look at this. Then there's also the Children of God website. I have to get that specific website for you. And they did what's commonly known as a deep dive, in which they go through all the ones on this list, and they demonstrate really conclusively that talking point is really just that. It doesn't really hold water when you scrutinize it. So I wanted you to be aware of it, and you can get these articles if you're interested by the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show, or you can go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and you'll find everything there as well. Let's go to Don now in Calgary, Canada. Hi, Don.
Hi, Patrick. I'm just calling. I found out that my daughter, she's 18, Mm-hmm. And she's pregnant. She was hiding it, obviously, from me, and I kind of figured it out. Mm-hmm. I also kind of figured out we were going to go away this weekend, and she said she couldn't go, so I actually think that she has an abortion planned. I'm trying to tell her, you know, not to do this. Her father is aware, and he is saying that he supports whatever decision she makes, so it's kind of a difficult situation. So I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts.
When you say her father, is he your husband? Are the two of you together?
So we're not together, and he lives in a separate province. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, she definitely has abandonment issues already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Here's what I would suggest.
So,
if there's time before this, you know, before you think this is scheduled, if I were you, I would go to liveaction.org is a good place to go. But what I meant to say was go to virtuemedia.org. Do you have a pen handy? Don?
I'm good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So just jot that down, virtuemedia.org. Now they have, what they're known for primarily is they produce really, really high production quality commercials for secular television. And they have them all loaded up there at virtuemedia.org. So what I would suggest is go there and get a few of these videos and text them to your daughter. So if you go to virtuemedia.org, up at the top, it says the upper right, our ads. It's sort of in the center, so our ads. And they have ads in a different genres. There are many, many of them. And in many cases, it's women speaking about their own abortions, and it's not hard. It's not heavy-handed, is what I mean to say. It is hard-hitting in an emotional way, but it's not heavy-handed. So it takes the approach of love and a woman's experience after the fact. And there are many of these. There are also some really moving ones. Very clever. Like there's one, for example, I want to find out which one it is. It's called Vanished. So you see a man who's standing by a school bus, and the school bus pulls up, and all these little kids, grade school kids, start getting off the bus because they're happy. School's over. They're going home. And you see some of the parents holding the hands with their child who's coming out, and certain kids who are coming off the bus just disappear. And what you understand when you see that is that those are the children who have been aborted. They would have been children and that school bus. They would have been coming home from school. And I'll tell you, these are very powerful. And I suspect that there's probably not much that you can say to your daughter about the evil of abortion that will get through to her. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if some of these videos did get through to her at the heart level. And it just might turn her around before she makes that fateful decision. I would try that.
Okay. Can you repeat that website again?
Virtuemedia.org.
Okay.
Virtuemedia.org. And we'll post a link so that anyone can see it. So my strategy would be this, Dawn. I would send her a couple of the videos. Like, send her a couple of videos of the women talking about their own experience after an abortion. Then I would send her maybe the one with the school bus, okay? It's called Vanished.
Okay.
Then I would just text her the link to that whole site, that whole page where all the videos are, because then she may take it upon herself to start exploring and looking at some more of these things.
Okay. I did send her a couple of videos from Live Action, but she just got angry with me.
Let her get angry. That's fine. Her anger is immaterial right now. You're trying to reach her before she makes a terrible decision. And, you know, if she's angry now, she may be grateful to you afterward if, in fact, she does decide not to go through with this. She may thank you. So I would put up with the anger right now and just send it to her. Or maybe if you know of some other people who care about her and have her phone number, have other people text these to her so that she'll receive it from other people, not just mom.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like the old saying goes, pray as if everything depends upon God and work as if everything depends upon you. And that way, and there's another part of this too, Don, if you are proactive and you try these creative ways of reaching her, you'll never have to look back later in life with regret saying, I wish I had done something. I wish I had said something, because you'll know that you did everything you possibly could.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome. I know this is sorrowful, but there's still time. So be a mama tiger and defend your daughter and send her some of these things, and I think it will help. I hope it will.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Terribly painful to imagine any mother or father watching a child go down that road. So if that describes you, or you're in a situation where you can do something about it, do not hesitate to send some of these beautiful, well-produced, emotionally powerful, but still very gentle and respectful videos. Send them, text them, and you know, let the chips fall where they may. But I have a feeling that maybe many young women, they wind up going through with the abortions because there was nobody in the family or friends or circle of people that they knew who was willing to take the time to do something like that. And maybe something like that is all it would take to rescue a mother and her unborn child from an abortion. So try, what have you got to lose? You have nothing whatsoever to lose. And if you get an angry email response or angry text back saying, stop sending me this stuff, okay, I'll stop sending you this stuff. I'll respect you, but you'll be able to look yourself in the mirror later and you'll never have those regrets feeling like, oh, I wish I had said something. So, well, let's see. We're going to take a break. I want to just one more time, just thank you so much for your generosity during Pledge Drive, which is over now, but we not only met our goal of $2.7 million, our need to keep everything fully funded, but we exceeded it. We went beyond it. And I hope to have a number I can share with you before the end of the show today and tell you exactly what we got to. But we got there because of your generosity and God's blessing. So again, thank you. We deeply appreciate it. And if you weren't able to participate, we understand. Life gets busy. We're going to hold the door open for a little bit yet. So if you want to go to relevantradio.com, you can make your pledge there. We'll count it for this pledge drive or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at catholichealthshare.com. That's catholichealthshare.com.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
There are places I remember.
Love this song.
All my life.
What a beautiful song.
Some have changed, some forever.
888-914-9149. That's the number to dial. You may remember that in the news in the past, I don't know, week or two, there was a plot that was foiled to poison the water supply. This is down in Oldsmar, Florida. And there was a plot afoot to poison the water system, which could have, you know, perhaps even killed many thousands of people. Well, there's a very interesting article here. This is in ProPublica.org about how surprisingly easy it would be to poison the water supply where you live. So they talk a little bit about the plot and how the plot was foiled. Experts say the sorts of rudimentary vulnerabilities revealed in the breach include the lack of an internet firewall and the use of shared passwords and outdated software that are common among America's 151,000 public water systems. Now, the plot involved hacking into the system and then dumping raw sewage into the drinking water system. And had that been done successfully, who knows how many people could have died from that. Retired Admiral Mark Montgomery says, frankly, they got very lucky. They shouldn't celebrate like Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl. They didn't win a game. They averted a disaster. through a lot of good fortune. And the article gets into how easily this could be done just by simple hacking. The motive and identity of the hackers, foreign or domestic, remain unknown, but Montgomery and other experts say a more sophisticated hacker than the one in Florida who attempted to boost the quantity of lye in the drinking water to dangerous levels could have wreaked havoc. They're skeptical of the city's assurances that redundant electronic monitors at the plant protected citizens from any possible harm. Montgomery says, if the attackers could breach into the lye controls, don't you think they could break into the alarm system and alter the checkpoints? It's a mistake to think a hacker could not introduce contaminated water into our water systems. And it goes on from there. I mean, it's just a lot of information here, and it has to do with the potential, and according to this article, a rather easy thing to do, surprisingly, shockingly, to kill people by poisoning the water system. So I would recommend that you read that article and just be aware of, you know, what the situations are. And that way, if there's ever even a hint of a problem with the water system, you know, have some bottled water on hand. Keep it in your house. Put a little extra food aside every time you go to the grocery store. Stock up. Am I saying to hoard? Not really. No, I guess, but kind of. Not hoarding in the strict sense, but you would be smart to stock up on things and have some water and have other things, other necessities in the house, because things are weird right now. And supply chain and lack of employees and container ships piling up at the port of Long Beach in California and other things are going on, shortages, things that you thought you could easily get and you can't. So my advice is just be prepared. It's the Boy Scout oath. Be prepared. And stock up. And one good reason to do that is so that you'll have food on hand to help the people who didn't do that. So your friends and neighbors who may be stuck, you'll be in a position to help them. 888-914-9149. We'll go over to Chicagoland and talk to Jenny in Downers Grove, Illinois. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Patrick. I wanted to comment on your last caller. I just caught the tail end of the conversation between the two of you regarding her daughter, who is contemplating abortion. I wanted to encourage that mother. I had an abortion at 19. I have regretted that decision for 40 years. Every day, every minute of my life, I wanted to encourage this mother to continue, in spite of the anger, to have masses said, to pray the rosary, and to don't let her daughter's emotions cause her to back away, because life changes and that regret is so devastating to have to live with for the rest of one's life. There's also the Silent No More awareness campaign online that has thousands of people who have anonymously shared their regret, and sometimes that can help a person reconsider prior to making that devastating decision. So I just wanted to really encourage that lovely mom to not give up, persevere, and don't let those anger emotions cause her to back away from what she knows she needs to do.
It's all very important
and
stuff. Yeah, thank you, Jenny. Very true. Yeah, and the point that you made, I particularly agree with, is that, you know, which is worse, to have to deal with some irritation, you know, some backlash that somebody gives you, versus for the rest of your life regretting not having tried to do something? I would far more rather deal with irritation up front than a lifetime of regret, right?
Right, and where I'm at right now, I'm in my 60s, but I am so grateful for those who at least tried, because my perspective changed as my life moved forward.
Yeah. Jenny, it's an important point you're making. I'm glad you did. Thank you so much for that. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Eric in Brownsville, Texas. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm calling regarding a book that you recommended I read called The Tree of Hate by Philip Powell.
Yes. What do you think?
And I was really calling to thank you, because You recommended it mainly regarding the Spanish Inquisition, but it also explains how the cultural and geopolitical views of Protestant Anglos mm-hmm. Were formed in the 16th century. Mm-hmm. And the prejudices and that were, you know, perpetuated down to today.
Yes, they have been. They have been. In fact, it is actually part of, it's one of the root causes of the antipathy that many in the United States feel toward Mexicans and other people from south of the border coming up into this country. There is a kind of a residual, antipathy probably is the best word for it, a residual antipathy that was inherited through the black legend of the Inquisition and the vilification of Spain and then into Latin America. I mean, it's not solely that by any stretch, but it has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And American Anglos, the views of the Hispanic world and Catholicism come out of this propaganda of the 16th century. And it's just amazing to see how your worldview could be shaped
yes.
by something that you were not even aware of.
Yes, and, exactly.
So it really opened my eyes, and I've been listening to Relevant Radio a lot, like daily, pretty much, especially to your show, mm-hmm. and I even contributed to the pledge drive.
Thank you.
And it's really clarified the Catholic worldview, and I guess to borrow your term, I've become very Catholic friendly.
That's good. Are you Catholic right now, or are you thinking about becoming Catholic?
No, I'm one of these Anglo Protestants that the book's talking about. Mm. So it really made me open my eyes to see the world and why I see the world the way I do, and
that
made me rethink a lot of things.
That is incredibly honest of you and humble of you, Eric, to say that. I want to commend you for that. Not a lot of people would be willing to say what you just said, so kudos to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You're always opening our eyes to the truth. It's really refreshing.
Thank you, Eric. Well, God bless you. I hope you'll keep listening to the show. And yeah, the book that Eric is referring to is called Tree of Hate, Propaganda and Prejudices Affecting United States Relations with the Hispanic World. And it's written by Philip Wayne Powell. This is a newer edition. I've had my edition for some years longer. I think it first came out in the early 1970s. That's probably the edition I have. But it was really eye-opening because it takes an historian and a social scientist perspective on how, in fact, so many of these stereotypes and animosities and antipathies, to use the word again, that have been inherited in these United States from something that was actually circulated by Protestant England 450 years ago as a psyop against Spain. So England in its geopolitical struggle against Spain and some of the other European powers for colonization and the exploitation of natural resources and the gaining of wealth and military superiority, all of those projects that were underway 450, 500 years ago between England and Spain, as an example, they took on a religious character because the Church of England was so deeply intertwined with the crown after King Henry VIII established the Church of England. And the Catholic Church was so deeply intertwined with the crown in Spain. And when you saw one, you saw the other and vice versa. So the British, the English, they were very astute in realizing that they could turn the attitudes of their formerly Catholic people away not only from any kind of sympathy towards Spain, but also, again, they could turn them away from the Catholic Church even more decisively by weaving this narrative that the Spanish and Catholics were bloodthirsty, cruel, sadistic, barbarous people. And this is where the black legend got started. Now, it doesn't mean that there were not bad things that happened during the Spanish Inquisition. There certainly were. And by today's standards, we would decry a great deal of what happened. But, you know, torture, for example, and execution by burning at the stake, those are all commonplace in Protestant countries. They were commonplace. They were no different in Spain than they were in Protestant countries or other countries, for that matter, that did not have the Christian faith in some sort. So this political slash religious offensive against Catholics in the Spanish was very effective. So much so that even today, people without even realizing where some of these attitudes come from, they still suffer the bad hangover of these myths that were perpetuated about Spanish people and about the Catholic Church. So there's a sort of a little recap of what I had said about the book in the first place. So if you want to get an historian's account of what's going on here, that would be the book, Tree of Hate, Propaganda and Prejudices Affecting United States Relations with the Hispanic World. How about, oh, you know, we don't have time for a call because we have to take a break. So we're going to do that now and we'll come back.
Man's got to know his limitations.
You just love that sound effect, Cyrus. I know you do. So we will be returning here momentarily. Don't forget what I said. Pledge Drive is over. We had a monumental success of a Pledge Drive thanks to you and your generosity. But if it should happen that you missed out because you were busy or traveling, you can still make your pledge. We'll count you for this Pledge Drive. Go to relevantradio.com and make your pledge there or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back.